listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Russ Dallin is in the house. He is the guy that we turn to with regularity, I'm very happy to say, for insights into what is happening in our hemisphere that has bearing on our security or economic or other national interests. He comes to us as the president and editor-in-chief of the Latin American Herald Tribune. He is also the head of an international investment bank, Caracas Capital Markets. Always a welcome guest, and especially at a moment like this where there is high drama playing out at the moment in Venezuela. And I'm interested in knowing whether we're perhaps approaching some sort of end game there. Russ Dallin, welcome back. So good to have you.
Thank you, Secretary Gaffney. It's always a pleasure and educational for me, as well as I hope your listeners.
Well, thank you. Let's talk about the aftermath of the plebiscite that took place two weekends ago, I guess now, an overwhelming show of support from the people of Venezuela and expats around the world, for that matter, for a change in the direction of their country from the kind of consolidation of power and increasing tyranny of the regime of Nicolas Maduro. What is happening now with respect to the next steps, Russ, I guess, in the way of a sort of transitional government on the part of the opposition and the pushback by the Maduro regime?
Yes, it's getting messy, as you and I both discussed and predicted over a month ago, as we approach that July 30th Constituent Assembly date. It's been mislabeled as an election. It's not really an election. There's no decision to have the Constituent Assembly. The government is just forcing it through and giving it superpowers that they don't even have to, because it'll be above the Constitution. So what little human rights guarantees the Constitution they were paying a little deference to will now be eliminated altogether.
So that's the transition Maduro has in mind. What is the opposition trying to effect in the way of a transition?
So the opposition is trying to maintain the legal thread by promoting last week. They promoted or named some new Supreme Court justices because the last ones were illegally named in the dark of the hours to without the proper hearings and everything to basically pack the Supreme Court, which has made it basically less a court than the president's personal law firm. And so they've named Supreme Court justices and swore them in on Saturday. And no sooner that day had they sworn in these new 23 justices than the first one was arrested. And then just moments ago, they arrested two others. The government did. Anyone that was named, not even that they have robes or a place to sit, the government is just rounding them up and throwing them in jail.
And it's rather harsh, as I understand it. Not only they're being imprisoned, but they are actually having their assets, their personal fortunes, such as they are, seized. This is hardball, shall we say. Where does the opposition go from here, as you see it, Russ Dallin? Do they really have any options if this Constituent Assembly business is jammed down the throats of the Venezuelan people?
Well, there are two strands on that policy. One is international and one is national. Domestically, tomorrow they'll have a two-day strike, which may begin affecting PDVSA, which is the oil company, the state-owned oil company of Venezuela, which basically produces what little wealth the country has. And if that goes on strike, then that certainly has the ability to shut off the cash flow. At the same time, internationally, President Trump wisely warned and shot a cannon across the bow of the Maduro regime that if they went ahead with this Constituent Assembly, there would be swift and strong economic actions, quote unquote. So they have been warned. Those economic actions include halting Venezuelan oil. And as a matter of fact, one of the problems with halting Venezuelan oil was it was just only 700,000 barrels a day. But it's the third largest oil supplier to the U.S. No politician wants to be the politician that raises gasoline prices. That's been a death knell for a long time. So President Trump has agreed to release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And as a matter of fact, had already planned to do so over a 10-year period because of market conditions, because he wanted to bring the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, down to half of what it currently is. So the Venezuelan oil can be replaced with our own domestic production that's in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
The question that I guess I'm most seized with is what Russia is doing at the moment to try to help prop up the Maduro regime and perhaps offset the sorts of sanctions that you've just described that seem to be eminently sensible and needed on the part of our government, Russ Stalin. Specifically, as we've discussed before, the Venezuelan regime has already essentially sold off to the Russians the Citgo operations of the Venezuelan company PDVSA, which has its whole set of concerns for us in this country from a national security point of view. We talked a brief bit ago with Kevin Freeman about the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States reviewing these sorts of transactions. And I know you're concerned about that happening, as am I. But I was also told, Russ, that there has been a recent commitment on the part of the Maduro regime essentially to sell to the Russians the reserves of Venezuela. Is that true? And how could they do that? And are the Russians picking this up at fire sale prices to simply enable the regime to survive?
Yes, is the short answer. You hit the nail on the head, Frank. Russia is happy to step into the vacuum that's been left by the United States. And indeed, they are literally buying assets that were created by some of our greatest companies, ExxonMobil, for example, which was expropriated by Chavez in 2007-2008. Even though ExxonMobil was awarded at the International Arbitrational Panel at the World Bank $1.6 billion, they sold it to Rosneft for $500 million. They're doing the same thing with ConocoPhillips, which was also had actually three ventures with over $4.5 billion invested in Venezuela before Mr. Chavez decided to take it without paying. And Russia's looking to buy that for another $1.5 billion for that $4.5 billion investment from one of the top technological and most advanced oil companies we have on the face of the planet. So they're looking for bargains, and there are certainly many to be had. The problem is that they are worried. Obviously, if they invest these things, if the opposition comes back into power, the opposition will not allow those contracts to stand, most likely. So that is Russia's concern at this point, which helps ally them with Maduro and his regime and to stay in power.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Russ Stalin, for this update and all the terrific work you do in reporting on what is happening so the rest of us can understand or at least try to make sense of it in Venezuela and elsewhere across the hemisphere at the Latin American Herald Tribune. And we appreciate your taking the time today and look forward to talking with you again soon as this drama continues to play out. Next up, we will be speaking with Janet Tavakoli about developments in the world of Islam and what it means for you. That and more straight ahead.